You're listening to OCAP Radio, live on CKLN, broadcasting from the Ryerson University campus, streaming online, and formerly 88.1 on the FM dial. We have a jam-packed show for you today. We will be speaking with Mohan Mishra from No One Is Illegal a little bit later on about the fight for justice for migrants. We will also be bringing you the sounds of the Raise the Rates demonstration that happened earlier in the month. And first up, however, we will be doing a tribute to Dudley Laws, a longstanding activist in the city. But first up, here are your headlines.
And thanks for that, AJ. We begin today with international headlines. And those come thanks to Chital, who has been with our crew for a short while, but long enough to help us get all of this together. So attention is focused on this Earth Day on national climate change and instances of nuclear disaster. Environmental and feminist activists Vandana Shiva and Maud Barlow, head of the Council of Canadians, Canada's largest public advocacy organization, have hosted the Harmony with Nature conference this year with the United Nations General Assembly to mark the one-year anniversary of the BP oil disaster and to discuss the nuclear catastrophe in Japan. The conference attendees have gathered to discuss the implementation of new international standards that grant nature equal rights to humans. Several nations have already adopted these protocols, including Bolivia and Ecuador. The UN has warned that the world needs to be prepared for more nuclear accidents and environmental disasters. In fact, in the U.S. in Pennsylvania, thousands of gallons of toxic drilling fuel has spilled into waterways after a blow-up of the natural gas well. Local residents have been evacuated.
In Japan, meanwhile, workers have begun to pump radioactive water from a leaking reactor into a temporary storage area. Fears continue to escalate as the Japanese government attempts to persuade the public of safe levels of radiation in food and water. However, the severity of the nuclear crisis has now equaled that of Chernobyl, with experts advising the Japanese government to continue with evacuations and to evacuate even wider areas. In Libya, mortar attacks have killed at least 10 civilians, including two well-known journalists and documentarians, Tim Hetherington, director of the documentary film Restrepo, and Chris Hondros. U.S. support of Libya continues with a promise to send $25 million in aid to the Libyan rebels. U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said that the money is, quote, for non-lethal aid, end quote, suggesting that the money is not a blank check, quote unquote, but rather money to provide medical supplies, uniforms, boots, tents, personal protective gear, radios, halal meals, and other measures to protect civilians.
In Egypt, court officials have ordered the removal of former President Hosni Mubarak's name and image from all public places, including sports fields, schools, libraries, and other institutions. Currently, over 500 institutions have Mubarak's name or image.
And now in Canadian news, The Star reports today that the NDP have overtaken the Liberals as the second most popular party in Canada right now. NDP leader Jack Layton has also made strides in Quebec, where voters generally tend to favor the Bloc. After the nationally televised debates in English and French, Layton was viewed favorably by both English and French speakers. Currently, 43% of the population support the Conservatives, with 24% in favor of the NDP and 21% in favor of the Liberals. Experts have speculated that such a rise in NDP popularity spells a minority victory for the Conservatives, because those voters who are undecided or who favor center positions will vote Liberal and thus split the anti-conservative votes.
Voting apathy continues among Canadian youth. While there are 3 million voters under the age of 25 in Canada, only 1 in 3 will cast a vote in the upcoming federal election. Statistics show that Canadian youth are among the least engaged in comparison with other democratic countries. According to polls, youth voters favor the Liberals, the NDPs, and the Green Party, and do not support the Conservatives. In fact, if each youth voted, there might be a difference in 20 to 30 seats in the House of Parliament.
Immigration policies will become more stringent under a conservative government. Stephen Harper is proposing to replace permanent resident status with temporary status for two years or longer for spouses and partners sponsored as part of the family class, quote, sponsors or common law partner in Canada, end quote, class category, which includes those who are in relationship of 2 years or less with their sponsors at the time of application. Critics of the proposal claim that the provision is sexist and will make immigrant women even more vulnerable to abuse.
And in local news, the TTC Wheel-Trans service is facing cutbacks. Currently, passengers who use Wheel-Trans pay the same fees as passengers using the general service, with 95% of operating costs for Wheel-Trans services covered by city subsidies rather than fares. The average cost for the TTC for a Wheel-Trans trip is $31. Currently, the TTC is trying to reassess the needs of those using Wheel-Trans to allocate some of those using Wheel-Trans to the general service. Last year, the TTC's Wheel-Trans trips increased by 19%.
And now we turn to some community announcements. The first is the 6th annual May Day of Action for Stots for All is next Sunday at 1 p.m. Sunday, May 1st, International Workers' Day. Rally, come out to rally in March and get a free meal at Queen Street West and Jameson Street, Parkdale.
And then there's the Walk the Labyrinth in Hyde Park, which is taking place today at 8 p.m. That's a nice, you know, night walk. In celebration of Earth Day in the Black Oak Savannah area, north of Grenadier Cafe and the Tea House. And it's free.
There is a five-day walk to protest the building of an open pit mine in Malacton Township, which began today at noon from Queen's Park. The walk will pass through Brampton, Caledon Village, Orangeville, Camilla, and Shelbourne, and will end up in Dufferin County on April 26th. For more information, go to www.citizensalliance.ca.
And there's the Celebrate 27 Arts Fest, C27, which communicates and celebrates Article 27's assertion of the universal right to all to participate in the arts and cultural life of the community with a series of events across Toronto from April 1st to April 27th. C27 promotes Toronto's vibrant cultural and community arts landscape in neighborhoods across the city and raises awareness of the diverse programs and services offered by local artists, local arts organizations, and the city. Partners include Arts Etobicoke, Lakeshore Arts, Urban Arts, Community Arts Council, Scarborough Arts, and the Neighborhood Arts Network. For more information, you can go to www.toronto.ca/culture/arts-services.
And this is a conference announcement. The Faculty of Fine Arts at York University in Toronto invites proposals for papers for a conference called Staging Sustainability, Arts, Community, Culture, and Environment, a conference taking place April 20th to the 22nd this weekend. The conference provides an opportunity for artists and those who support the arts in a myriad of ways, from scholars, critics, producers, designers, policymakers, industry, and government officials, to engage in interdisciplinary dialogue about issues associated with the creation of environmentally sustainable arts practice and performance.
And for those of you who are going to be in Montreal sometime in late May, you're invited to visit the OCAP table at the Anarchist Book Fair, which is taking place in Montreal between May 21st and 22nd, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the CEDA, which is located at 2515 Rue de Lille. And it's all free. So you should all, you know, take that as an excuse to visit All Good Montreal. And then there's also one last announcement, and it's an encouraging announcement for all of our listeners who now no longer find us on the 88.1 FM, but we're still kicking it around and like online. Please go and visit us at www.ckln.fm and sign our petition. Let's protect community radio and let's see what we can do about restoring our voices to the FM. And I think that does it for the headlines. We're going to take a quick musical break and we'll be back with more OCAP radio. So don't, you know, yeah, keep on listening. Don't switch to another program online.
So as I said earlier, the first half of this show is dedicated to Dudley Laws, a founder of the Black Action Defense Committee, or BADC. He was a social justice activist here in Toronto and passed away last month. Born in Jamaica in 1934, Laws dedicated his life to fighting injustice. He was particularly outspoken for migrant justice, against racism, and against police brutality, including the multiple shooting deaths of young black men. Laws and others started BADC in response to this shooting. His 50 years of activism, many of them here in this city, have forever changed Toronto's social justice movement. And joining me is Valerie Steeles, an activist and former president of the Canadian Jamaican Association. She's chair of the committee that planned the honor of Dudley Laws and is a longtime friend of his. Valerie?
Yes, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. First off, I want to say that I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you very much.
So, as I already said, Dudley did a lot in this city and contributed a great deal to social justice movements here in Toronto and also around the world. And I was wondering if you could just give us a couple of examples of his contributions.
Dudley Laws came to Canada in 1965, but after spending 10 years in England. So once he came here, he knew the face of inequality and injustice. It didn't take him long to become a part of the UNIA and the Jamaican Canadian Association. He also subscribed all his life to the belief that you have to have organization, or that a community has to be organized in order to voice its displeasure or pleasure with whatever is happening around it. And an example of that is the many organizations that he founded and co-founded. It is found that many of them are still here today. An example of Dudley's indelible mark on Canada, which goes really on the black community in particular, is being instrumental in getting the SIU into existence because of the police brutality and the shooting of young black men in the 80s. So Brother Dudley, the Lord, as I prefer to call him, made a profound impact on Canada. The history of Canada will never be the same, because he made sure that he consistently addressed the inequities and unfairness that many institutions, not just the police, but many institutions, literally assault our community with the violence of racism, exclusion, unfairness, things like that. So, Mr. Laws is a commitment to this community to be well-documented.
Definitely. And I think one of the major impacts that the Black Action Defense Committee has done is work to mentor many, many, many very important activists in this city. What is next for BADC, do you know at this point?
Well, BADC, Dudley Laws cannot be replaced. So BADC will not be setting out to replace Mr. Laws. What BADC will be doing, I am certain, is to ensure that the work continues and that there is a voice for the voiceless. That's exactly what Mr. Laws did all his life, making certain powers that we knew where we stood. That is something that the African Canadian community, in particular, must continue to do. It's imperative. It has to be done.
Definitely. And I just wanted to invite you to maybe share one of your happiest memories about Dudley for our listeners.
Well, he was a great cook, fabulous sense of humor. And although as an activist, people think you're angry all the time, but it's not true. He was a joyful person to get along with. And what I will miss the most is the daily phone calls that say, "Hi, dear, how are you?" And that alone made me laugh, you know, because sometimes I am the one who makes the calls and he's returning it. but that gentle soul. And he was gentle and joyful to be around, happy person. And for me, it was a lot of troubles in my own life, too, and he was always there standing beside me. And I have many, many stories that I still laugh about. And it's for the gentle soul. You go to him and you say something, you listen well, and then he gives you his opinion. And he's never yelling, never raising his voice. So those are the legacies that I'll always remember. Whenever things go wrong and I am mad about it, I remember that Mr. Lord is always calm.
And I think many of us will be looking to his legacy for many years to come in this city and across the country. Thank you so much for joining me, Valerie.
You're welcome.
And we're going to... Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And we're going to take a short music break. This will be Mr. Moneyman by Pulsar, and we'll be back with more of our tribute to Dudley Laws. That was actually Parliament with One Nation Under a Groove. And joining us on the line now is Charlie Roach, a longtime friend of Dudley Laws and co-founder of BADSI. Mr. Roach is a prominent lawyer who has represented members of the Black Panther Party and others seeking asylum. He is also a co-founder of Carabana, an artist and a musician. Charlie Roach, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, AJ. Thank you.
I just spoke with Valerie Steele, and as I said to her, I want to wish you my most sincere condolences for the loss of Dudley.
Yes, thank you. I'm going to miss him a lot because we had a relationship over 45 years of doing some really, what I consider really good work that benefited the African-Canadian community and working people and poor people at large.
Absolutely. I wanted to talk a little bit about BADSI, which you co-founded with Dudley, and wanted to ask what were the circumstances that brought that organization together?
Yes. Before that organization was formed, we had been active in other things around the same kinds of issues. So we would have ad hoc committees around certain issues. For example, there was a man by the name of Buddy Evans who was shot and killed at a discotheque by police officers, and we were very concerned about the circumstances of the use of force in that case, and that would have been in about 78, about 78, and we had this group called the Committee for Justice, the Committee for Justice for Buddy Evans. And then following that, we had Albert Johnson's killing, and we had a committee around Albert Johnson. He was shot and killed in his home. I think the year was 1979. And as a result of that, we had many, many subcommittees and things like that going on. Then we had, we lost a few other people in this city and in Montreal, and we were around doing things with ad hoc committees around each of these instances. And then when Lester Donaldson died, I think the year was 89 or thereabouts, when he died, we got together and said we need to form a permanent committee that would deal with the criminal justice system and policing and law enforcement generally. So we got together, a number of us, and formed a committee. It was to be just a committee of about 8 or 9 people. So that's how that came about.
And I want to ask you a little bit about 1992, a few years after BADC was founded, when the Rodney King verdict was handing down, as well as right around that time, there was a shooting in the city of a black man. There were protests that gathered outside of the U.S. Embassy, I believe, and can you tell me a little bit about what happened there?
Yeah. Well, three things converged. There was a demonstration about a week before, which was around the acquittal of two police officers who had shot and killed Wade Lawson. And that demonstration was a successful one in the sense that there was nothing untoward, no violence or anything. BATSI has a policy of non-violent social change, and we didn't even engage in what you might call civil disobedience, because we're not really a revolutionary group. We just fought for radical changes within the system. So, and that in 1993, in the summer of that year, well, 92, I think it was, in the summer of that year, what happened was there was a Rodney King decision in California, and there was the shooting of a man called, I think his name was Lawrence, his last name was Lawrence, and here in the Parkdale area. And then there was this decision acquitting the two officers who shot and killed Wade Lawson. And those three things came together and really upset people. So there was a demonstration called, and as a result of that demonstration, I was not in the city at that time. I was in Atlanta, or rather in Savannah, Georgia. And there were demonstrations all across the country around Rodney King's situation, all across the United States. But that sort of replicated itself here in Canada. So this demonstration, now this would be hearsay because I wasn't here. I came 2 days after this. This demonstration, after it was finished, there was a number of young people who were involved who decided that they would go back down to Yonge Street in another demonstration, which was not a BATSI demonstration per se, and they started getting out of hand and being violent. So they went to the Eaton Center and they broke windows and did a number of things which we disapproved of, but they didn't end it there. The following night they just went and did the same thing. So they were like two days of rioting in the city on Yonge Street.
which I was a child at the time, but as my understanding was a physical expression of the rage that a lot of people felt in this city because of the years of brutality and racism, mostly by the police for that issue, but also just generally speaking. It's my understanding that the city council had an emergency meeting where they voted to ask Badsey to postpone another scheduled protest.
Yes. After I came back, Badsey had planned a peaceful protest. They said, look, we are not going to be quieted because of all of this disturbance. And so I was involved in this one, and I can tell you we had planned a large demonstration, and we arranged that we'd have enough marshals and so on, and so that we would not have things get out of hand. But Queen's Park, this was Bob Rae was in power at that time, his government, the NDP. They sent a couple members of parliament up to Batsy's office on Vaughan Road at one of our planning meetings to persuade us not to carry out that demonstration. Well, I was in favor of carrying out the demonstration because I was quite certain that we could do this without any breaching of the law and so forth. We never used to ask for permits and so on, because if we didn't get a permit, we'd just be on the sidewalk, and if the sidewalk was so thick with people might overflow into the streets and so on. But anyway, these two members of parliament eventually persuaded us instead to have the rally just at Queen's Park rather than having it in the streets. And they said that the premier would come out and speak to us and so forth. I was really upset that we'd made that decision. And I had a difference of opinion with the Black Action Defense Committee. But they went ahead and they held the demonstration at Queen's Park. And the premier came out and spoke to them, and he spoke very well. He used to relate quite well with the community, and he promised at that time, or sometime subsequent, to have a full commission of inquiry into racism in the criminal justice system, and as a result of that gathering, we did get this commission in which a judge and a layperson were the commissioners, and there were a number of other people on that commission who did an investigation into racism in the criminal justice system and in the prisons, and that was quite useful in improving the system. And a report called the Report of the Commission on Systemic Racism in the Ontario criminal justice system came out. It was quite a substantial report, and it proved that there was racial profiling, and there was a lot of statistical evidence in it, which later on helped to ease the situation. So my belief is that, in fact, not my belief, I know as a fact, that things have improved with respect to policing and with respect to racism and racial profiling in the criminal justice system. And also, so far as policing is concerned, there was more diversity that came about after that time, and more recruitment of various nationalities. Because prior to that, the police force was mainly Anglo-Saxon, Irish, Scots, and so forth, English and so forth. But then, now the force has become much more diverse.
And we're almost out of time, I'm sorry to say, but I wanted to ask you very quickly what you think one of the greatest achievements of Dudley and Badsey has been over the years.
His greatest achievement was his example to ordinary working folk that you don't have to be in politics or in parliament or the legislature or the city council or hold a position to make change. And you can make some substantial change in active groups which sort of mobilize public opinion and bring community pressure to bear on the system. And the system has always reacted to that community pressure. So he was a person who didn't have degrees and he didn't have any lofty position. He was a rank-and-file person. He was a welder and a cab driver who made a tremendous change just because of his single-mindedness. So I think the biggest lesson that he's taught us is that you don't have to be a politician, a prime minister, or pope, or somebody in high position, but you could be like a Rosa Parks or he himself, Dudley Laws, get on the streets and mobilize people and bring about social change for the betterment of society generally.
Which is a very important lesson for us all. Thank you so much for joining me.
Okay, AJ.
And please,
bye-bye.
Thank you. And up next, we have a musical break, and please keep listening. We still have No One Is Illegal, as well as audio from the Raise the Rates demonstration from April 1st that OCAP held. That was a very successful demonstration. Organizer with No One Is Illegal. Again, that's Mohan Mishra, who is joining us on the line. No One Is Illegal is about to hold its sixth annual March for Status for All. Mohan?
Hi, AJ.
Hi, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
So the sixth annual March for Status for All is coming up. What is the theme for this year?
Well, this year, what we're saying is that we want people to come out and vote on the streets. It's the, as obviously everyone knows, we're in the middle of an election campaign. But what we're saying is that we know that the leaders that are running for office are not going to serve our communities. They're not going to give poor communities, migrant communities, what we need to get by. And so we're saying that come out and vote on the streets and really show the people in power that we can build power in our communities from the ground up.
And No One Is Illegal issued a press release recently about proposed changes to the immigration system. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Sure. The recent proposal from CIC was that it wasn't actually legislation. It was a regulation change that they passed that what it would do is make permanent residency conditional for folks that are being sponsored as part of the family class or under marriage. And it's really disingenuous, the language they're using, but what they're calling it is conditional permanent residency, which is obviously an oxymoron. What it would do is that for anyone that's being sponsored to come here by a spouse, that if they were in that relationship for less than 2 years, they would actually be subjected to a period of 2 years or more. They haven't laid out yet, but most likely longer than 2 years, where they'd basically be watched by CIC, and they'd have to prove that they're in a bona fide relationship, quote unquote. What that means concretely is that women, especially people that are in a relationship, their status is tied to their relationship. So if there's a situation of abuse or domestic violence and they want to get out, they actually can't because they would risk losing their status here in Canada.
Which I would seem would make it far more difficult and scary for women to speak out or to leave their abusive partners.
Yeah, that's exactly the huge problem that we see with this. So what we're asking folks to do, and people can go to the website and check it out, it's noonesillegal.org. There's a call out there, a community alert, asking people to call in. The government is accepting submissions on this until Monday, so next week. So if you do it on Monday, you can still get in comments. But basically, we're asking people to call in, write in, let CIC know that we're not going to accept this, that this is something that we know is going to put women in more precarious positions, that's going to further entrench this temporariness that they're trying to put in through the immigration system. So please do check that out and call in and write in, and let's see if we can do something about it.
And for Sunday, when and where should people come, and what should they expect?
Sunday, it's going to be, as you mentioned, the 6th annual May Day of Action for Status for All. Sunday is starting in Parkdale, and the reason it's starting in Parkdale is that over the holidays, what we saw was that despite huge community mobilizations, that a student from Parkdale Collegiate, from the community, was actually picked up on Christmas Eve and deported on New Year's Day. And the people in Parkdale that were fighting around that case are still there and still fighting for status for undocumented folks, for status for migrant workers in the community. We're going to be starting there. Hopefully we'll see thousands of people out on the street. It's going to be loud. It's going to be festive. And definitely very colorful. There's going to be some amazing energy, some amazing musicians and bands playing. And we'll be marching from there up to Dufferin Grove Park. And part of the significance of that, especially on the eve of the elections, is that Dufferin Grove Park, when the Conservatives first came into power in 2006, they actually started doing immigration raids, raids of people in public places, like at the park, at the mall, at the subway stations. And we fought that. And we're able to mobilize hundreds of people, and then on the first May Day, thousands of people to fight that. And we actually saw that those raids stopped because of community mobilization. So, you know, with the knowledge that we can actually have a concrete effect on how immigration enforcement carries out its business in the city, we're going to be loud and festive, but we're also going to be out there with the spirit of really building community power.
Thank you very much, Mohan. Please go out and vote in the street. And for those of you who are following the election, this song is dedicated to you. It is Rock Plaza Central with Don't Believe the Words of Handsome Men. And after that, we will have audio from the Raise the Rates demo.
Believe the words of handsome men. Don't you believe the words. we're going to ask folks from the Hamilton Campaign for Adequate Welfare and Disability Benefits, who came all the way here today, to speak. First up is Michelle. Hello, everyone! We have gathered here today to let the powers to be know that we are not going away, and we will continue to fight for dignity and justice. We all want you to know that globalization and the neoliberal policies that have been imposed on us by nameless and faceless CEOs and right-wing think tanks, which affect the poor, public sector workers, the working poor, the disabled, foreign workers, and new immigrants, will no longer divide us, but bring us together as we all fight for our families and the future of our children and grandchildren. We will all stand together in solidarity to rebuild our communities. The Raise the Rates campaign has been ongoing since 2005 and has garnered more support, and it will continue to grow as we inform people to disregard the myths that mainstream media perpetuates to criminalize not only the poor, but now all workers who fought to organize for a better standard of living while limiting non-unionized workers' ability to organize.
Hi, everyone. How is everyone doing today? As a single mother, I struggle to raise my child, and I fear for my child's future. I will not stop speaking out, and I know that together we can change things for the betterment of all. We can empower each other so that the many can become one voice. The first step is to be informed, to look beyond the 10-second soundbites that are pushed at us and learn about the real issues that affect us all. There is power when we join together to fight for justice. Please join us in solidarity for true dignity and justice. Thank you.
Thank you, Ursula. Up next is Jane Finch, Action Against Poverty. We're asking Butterfly to come up and speak. Jane Finch has been doing a tremendous amount of anti-poverty work in the Jane Finch neighborhood. Butterfly? Organizer that came all the way from Sudbury for today.
Hi. We're here from Sudbury. A couple of us have managed to make it down because we face all of the same problems that people here face in terms of the cutting of the special diet and the abysmal social assistance rates that people are getting. So we're here to express the solidarity of people from Sudbury and from Northeastern Ontario. We also want to add in a few things. Sudbury is also where Kimberly Rogers died, where the Mike Harris government basically sentenced someone living in poverty to death because they violated rules that previously were entirely legal around getting Ontario Works and student support at the same time. And we still remember Kimberly Rogers, and we still need to remember what happened to her when we fight against these cruel, anti-poor, anti-human governments. So we remember Kimberly Rogers when we're here. I want to add in just two things about what's going on in Sudbury. In Sudbury, poverty impacts on Indigenous people in particular. And it's really important for us to talk about how colonization and racism and poverty come together in the experiences of Indigenous people, and we need to recognize that, and we also need to recognize that we are standing right now on Indigenous land, and we need to recognize the struggles of Indigenous people. The final thing I want to talk about is that in Sudbury right now, there's a major social cleansing operation going on. against poor and homeless people who are being denied access to the downtown mall, where many of these agencies serving people living in poverty are located. There are also many people living in poverty are even being barred from the mission and from the soup kitchen run by the Catholic Church. So there's all sorts of problems that people living in poverty are facing. In Sudbury, they've made it impossible for people in the middle of the winter, when there's lots of homeless people, to even sleep under the bridges at night. So they have to sleep out in the open cold. This is horrific, and we need to oppose it, and we need to build... And we need to build a powerful anti-poverty movement in this province that will kick the liberals out, that will create a just society, and that will end poverty forever. Sorry for people in the audience. Let's fight this language of poverty reduction that the provincial government is involved in. We're not interested in reducing poverty. We're interested in ending poverty and ending all of those people who want to keep us living in poverty. Thanks a lot. Solidarity. Raise the rates.
And our final speaker today is Lisa Schofield from the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. Okay, how's it? And our final speaker today is Lisa Schofield from the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. Okay, how's everyone doing? I know that was a long march. That was way up University Avenue, but thank you everybody for doing that. And thank you everybody for coming out here today. I know, you know, this has been a long struggle, the special diet, the fight for the special diet and to fight to raise social assistance rates, 16 long years of this struggle. But it's amazing that people have come out and that we are fighting back and that we're here today in front of this ministry who is responsible for keeping people poor. And that this is part of what we do. This is part of what, as Pete has said, what we need to be doing every single day, disrupting the business, disrupting business as usual of these sorts of institutions. And of when Dwight Duncan thinks that he can have some sort of special event down at the Sheraton Hotel with rich bankers, that we are there in his face and we are disrupting that event as well. So we started out at City Hall today, not as a coincidence, but to make the link to what's going on the city level with Rob Ford as our new unfortunate mayor of the City of Toronto. Boo, exactly. I don't need to convince the people here how awful Rob Ford is. But on the city level, we are seeing that Rob Ford is going after public sector workers, going after our friends in QP Local 416, looking towards privatization, and this is a total and utter shame. And we will stand in solidarity with those QP workers as they fight back against Ford and this privatization push. But also, we are seeing within Ford's first budget, within his first budget, we saw cuts to shelters, we saw cuts to transit, and we're seeing the ground being laid for cuts to come next year, probably to childcare, further to shelter. And Ford boasted in his budget about how this year, because of the decisions of this Liberal government, they would be saving $10 million on the city level in money that should have been going to special diet claims. The Liberals and Ford working together to deny poor people a benefit. We know that in the City of Toronto, there are over 76,000 people on the waiting list for social housing. That list is 10 years long. We know that there are 18,000 families on the waiting list for subsidized childcare spaces in this city. We know that those childcare spaces are likely to be cut under Ford next year, knowing that the province is putting nothing into childcare. We know that right now, relying on food banks is up 28% since the beginning of the economic crisis. More people are relying on food banks because they do not have enough money to survive. 400,000 people a month in Ontario rely on food banks, and this is a shame.
The bus from Hamilton is around the corner.
Oh, the bus from Hamilton is here. I'm going to wrap this up.
There.
I'm going to wrap this up real quick. So, you know, a lot of things are said about how and when poor people are supposed to fight back, how and when we're supposed to speak out. We're supposed to sit patiently maybe for a review to happen, as Gary has already said. We're supposed to be polite in how we talk to the Liberal government, without anger and without real demands. That we should be willing somehow to wait 16 long years, 16 long years, and have faith still in politicians to put forth this review that some change will come. But in the meantime, we've seen our families getting sick. We've seen people die. We've seen people forced onto the streets. So I think when they say, you know, we should be patient, we need to think about this as a life and death issue. This is not some light subject matter. We're talking about people's lives being shortened when they make cuts like the special diet. And I want to talk for a second to all of you who came here today, not to the politicians, not to the media. I want to talk to the people who came here today. I want to talk about what fighting back means in this age of austerity, in this age of social cutbacks, what being part of an organization like OCAP means right now, being part of the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. And people are here today with sign-up sheets. If you want to join OCAP, if you want to join this campaign, please sign up to the list. Lindsay and Mel are out there with this sign-up sheets and information about what is OCAP. What being part of the Raise the Rates campaign means of fighting for what people actually need and what we deserve. I, like Pete and like others who have said, am a product of the Harris years. I grew up in this system. I grew up on social assistance with my mom as a single mom, struggling every single month to be able to pay the rent, struggling every single day to be able to put food on the table. I'm a product of their effed up system for the students. I was a bad student, but, you know, I'm going to try. And there are those daily indignities of what it means to be poor, of being forced to live in deplorable conditions like folks in Toronto in bedbug-infested apartments.
With OCAP, call 416-925-6939. Or check us out online, www.ocapc.ca. So it's OCAP.ca. This has been OCAP Radio. We are streaming live online, formerly of 88.1 on the FM dial. Do not touch your mouse, because up next is Susie Alvarez Polkasange. Sorry, Susie, I just brutalized your last name. With Ventina Alberio. And this same time slot next week has a very special program called Outside Academia, and we will return to our regular programming. Every other Friday is a different show, and OCAP Radio is the fourth Friday of the month. And just thanks to Mark, Kelly, Sheetal, and Susie for helping get the program on the air. I am AJ Withers, and this has been OCAP Radio, and we're going to leave you with DJ Reaganomics with Fuego Puro.
fermento. Musculeta na área. Protota dama angolana, protota cota. Angolano, muita atenção. Golpistas na área. Toda dama que gosta de partir o braço dos mais velhos, ou seja lá de quem for. Musculeta avisa. Vou citar o nome de algumas aqui. Eu vou citar. A Jane também é golpista. Linda também é golpista. A Tânia também é golpista.